Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for March 15th, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gager. Government and politics, healthcare, public information. State Inspections Agency keeps draft legislation emails confidential. By Clark Kaufman, March 12th, 2024. The state agency that inspects Iowa nursing homes is refusing to disclose emails from the agency staff concerning proposed legislation. The Iowa Department of Inspections, Appeals, and Licensing is asserting that emails that were completed, sent, and received are preliminary, quote, draft, end quote, documents that aren't subject to disclosure under Iowa's open records law. The department's position is based on the fact that the subject matter of the emails is legislation that was still in the preliminary draft stages of development. In December of last year, the Iowa Capital Dispatch asked Dial for a copy of data the agency shared with lawmakers or the governor's office over the previous 10 days that were related to Dial's health facilities division. On January 25th, Dial said a search for the requested records yielded, quote, more than 300 emails, end quote, that were being reviewed by legal staff and that the cost to perform that work was estimated to be $100, which would have to be paid by the Capital Dispatch. That Capital Dispatch agreed to pay the $100. On February 9th, Dial provided the Capital Dispatch with four emails that related to Dial's efforts to reduce a backlog of complaint investigations and overdue inspections at nursing homes. At the time, Dial gave no indication that it was withholding any records as confidential, but indicated there were, quote, quite a few, end quote, documents the agency had deemed irrelevant. The Capital Dispatch then asked Dial for the 300 emails that were deemed irrelevant by Dial, plus the internal correspondence related to that determination. On February 28th, a Dial attorney provided redacted copies of documents related to the agency's search for records, but said that while hundreds of emails had been deemed irrelevant, they had not been not reviewed to determine whether they could be legally withheld from public disclosure under any of the exemptions to the Iowa Open Records Law. Such a review, the attorney said, would cost the Capital Dispatch $250. At that point, Dial also reported that it was withholding as confidential a set of emails that pertained to draft legislation. The Capital Dispatch responded by questioning whether emails that had been completed, sent, and received could be treated as draft documents simply because they discussed other documents that were still in the draft stages of completion. The Capital Dispatch noted that Iowa law states that the exemption for draft documents, quote, shall not apply to public records that are actually submitted for use or are used in the formulation, recommendation, adoption, or execution of any official policy or action of a governmental body, end quote. The Capital Dispatch asked Dial to turn over the emails. In response, Dial's attorney stated that, quote, the tentative and preliminary sharing of potential language for proposed legislation, end quote, rendered the email subject to the draft document exemption to the open records law. The attorney also noted that information in the email was not shared with legislators, who are the individuals who are authorized to adopt and execute official policy, but with the senior legal counsel for the legislative services agency that helps draft bills. The exemption to the state's open records law that Dow relies on does not require agencies to keep draft documents confidential. It, instead, gives public agencies the option of either disclosing or withholding draft documents. In fact, two of the emails the agency turned over on February 9th bear the subject header of, quote, draft summary. Among the Dow-related legislation being considered this session is House File 2585, which would enable Dial to forego a complaint-related on-site visit to a nursing home if Dial believes the complaint involved an issue that was already the subject of a complaint within the previous 90 days. Under the proposed new law, Dial could also forego an on-site inspection by choosing to investigate the matter by phone or through a review of electronically delivered records. Other elements of the bill would require Dial to provide training for nursing home staff at state expense, and would require Dial to consult with care facilities about any planned citations for regulatory violations before such citations are issued. A spate of deaths and serious injuries tied to regulatory violations in Iowa nursing homes has prompted Democratic and Republican lawmakers this year to propose a series of bills to address the issue. Republican lawmakers are backing bills they say will foster a more, quote, collaborative, end quote, approach to regulatory enforcement, while Democrats have argued the state isn't being tough enough on violators. Ag and environment, government and politics. Bill to limit purchases of new public land advances in House after early snag. By Jared Strong, March 12, 2024. Legislation that would prevent state conservation officials from acquiring new public land at auction or through donations from certain groups that obtain it at auction was advanced by an Iowa House subcommittee Tuesday. Senate File 2324 was approved by the Senate 2 weeks ago with a 30-17 vote and moved to the House. It has been widely condemned by conservation, environmental, and hunting organizations for its potential to limit public land acquisitions and the economic benefits they create for rural Iowa. A similar bill introduced in the House was rejected in early February by a subcommittee and is no longer available for consideration. But the Senate version was recommended 2-1 by a different House subcommittee on Tuesday that was led by the bill's author, Representative Austin Harris, Republican Moulton. Quote, "I find it extraordinarily regrettable, the controversy that has surrounded this bill, and I'm actually really surprised by it," Harris said. He said the bill is meant to codify an existing policy of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources that generally precludes it from competing for land that is auctioned. Harris insisted the bill would change nothing about public land acquisitions, but would merely ensure the department's policy continues. Opponents disagree and argue there may be situations in which the DNR should be able to buy land at auction, which its policy permits, but the legislation would not. They view the bill as the latest attempt to prevent the DNR from obtaining land for public use at the behest of farm groups. Last year, a bill that ultimately failed amid similar opposition would have prioritized the maintenance of state-owned land over acquisitions. It also passed the Senate, but by a larger margin, and failed to advance from one House committee before it was moved to a subcommittee also led by Harris. The subcommittee recommended the bill, but it did not advance further. The new bill has the support of the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation and the Iowa Cattlemen's Association, which have said the cheaper farmland that is sometimes obtained by the DNR would be better suited to beginning livestock farmers. Quote, "We believe the government should not be competing against constituents for land at auctions," said Jake Swanson of the association. "The bill codifies current DNR practice, which I know is true, and ensures loopholes are not created for entities to purchase land on the state's behalf," end quote. The bill would prohibit the DNR from accepting land donations from not-for-profit organizations that obtain the land at auction. Others argued that farmers with lots of land and money are the biggest competitors of beginning and smaller farmers, and that urban sprawl is a greater contributor to farmland losses, especially because it often consumes higher quality land. Quote, "If the stated problem is that there is a lack of land for farming, then I would presume that our legislation should be going after the biggest problem, not an issue where DNR is trying to, within its very narrow limits and budget, cobble together a semblance of a public land system," said Representative Austin Baith, Democrat Des Moines, a member of the three-person subcommittee who opposed the bill. In a recent five-year period, from fiscal years 2018 to 2022, the DNR bought an annual average of about 3,500 acres, according to DNR records. The average cost per acre was about $2,500. Last year, average farmland values reached a new record of about $11,800 per acre, according to Iowa State University. Education, government, and politics. GOP senator proposes dropping bill's reference to "Meet Baby Olivia" video. Panel advances bill specifying school curriculum on fetal development. By Robin Opsahl, March 12, 2024. Senate lawmakers moved forward Tuesday with a bill that would require fetal development videos and graphics to be shown in Iowa schools, human growth and development, and health classes. Senator Jeff Taylor, Republican Sioux Center, presented a planned amendment to House File 2617 that removes a specific reference to the, quote, "Meet Baby Olivia," end quote, video produced by the anti-abortion group Live Action. His proposal instead outlines requirements on what schools must include in their curriculum for students in grades 7 through 12 related to stages of human development from fertilization to birth during a pregnancy. The requirements include showing ultrasound videos showing development of brain and organs during pregnancy, as well as including computer-generated renderings or animations that depict, quote, "the humanity of the unborn child." Many conservative and anti-abortion advocates spoke in support of the measure, advocating for more educational requirements on fetal development. As critics said, the Baby Olivia video and legislation was, quote, "anti-abortion propaganda," end quote. Amber Williams, a member of the public supporting the bill, asked, quote, why that's a bad thing, end quote. Quote, because the reality is, abortion is painful, and it's a barbaric procedure that ends a human life, Williams said. And it also destroys our lives, whether that be through shame or regret or depression or just broken relationships. So if this education can prevent that from happening to our young generation, and that's a good thing. Maisie Stilwell, director of the public affairs for Planned Parenthood Advocates of Iowa, said comments from the bill supporters show that the measure, quote, is the propaganda that we've been saying it is from the beginning, end quote. Stilwell said that while she appreciated the amendments introduced by the Senate, the changes do not go, quote, far enough, end quote. Quote, we do believe that our young people deserve access to age-appropriate and medically accurate sex education, Stilwell said. And unfortunately, the prescriptive nature that remains within the bill leaves our students subject to the anti-abortion propaganda that we have heard by those in favor of the bill, ellipses. So students deserve better than what school districts would be allowed to put forth even after the amendment, end quote. Speakers with school organizations took issue with legislation requiring certain curriculum to be adopted at all Iowa schools, instead of following the current procedure of having the State Board of Education adopt educational standards and allowing local school districts to choose their own curriculum to meet those standards. Melissa Peterson with the Iowa State Education Association encouraged lawmakers to follow the current process for setting educational standards, but also said that the ISEA was opposed to, quote, the politicization of any curriculum, end quote. Quote, it is really hard to believe this is not about politics, Peterson said. When you look at the registrations and the fact that, from folks that we have heard who are actually in support of this bill, some of them said that's about abortion. Some of them said it's not about abortion. I would encourage the legislative body to take the appropriate way out of this conversation and leave standards and adjustments to the experts, the education professionals. Senator Herman Kornbach, Democrat Des Moines, warned lawmakers about passing measures mandating specific curriculum, pointing to existing Iowa code that states the State Board of Education or Department of Education should not require schools to adopt specific textbooks or, quote, specific instructional methodology, end quote, to meet core curriculum requirements, saying the bill violates this standard. Kornbach also said that while he understands some people want particular types of content to be mandatory for schools, he said lawmakers should avoid curriculum mandates. Quote, beware when you cross that line, Kornbach said. Next group that comes along and wants to push particular content may be pushing in a direction that you don't like. I think it's better that we withhold ourselves from that temptation. We allow local school districts to develop their own curriculum and make their own choices about their curriculum materials. Taylor said he believes there is, quote, flexibility, end quote, built into legislation on allowing school districts to make their own decisions on what specific ultrasounds, videos, and other material they want to show in classes, and the requirements are not, quote, unduly burdensome or restrictive, end quote. He also said that while he understands concerns about the, quote, political, end quote, nature of the legislation, he believes students learning about pregnancy and fetal development is important. Quote, we've seen advances in medical science, ellipses, in terms of ultrasound and even in utero topography, where we're able to see what's actually happening in terms of the miracle of life is taking place within the womb. And I think that's not something that's propaganda, Taylor said. That's reality, and we need to educate our children in reality. The bill moves to the Senate Education Committee for consideration, with Taylor and Senator Sandy Salmon signing on in support, with recommendation for an amendment. Government and politics. Healthcare. House passes bill adding age restrictions and capping THC for hemp products. By Robin Opsahl, March 12, 2024. Iowa House lawmakers approved a bill Tuesday making changes to the Iowa Hemp Act in an attempt to restrict higher potency THC products currently available for purchase in Iowa. House File 2605 would cap consumable hemp products to a maximum of 4 milligrams of tetrahydrocarbinol THC per serving and set a limit of 10 milligrams per container. In addition to new restrictions and penalties related to the possession, sale, and manufacturing of hemp products, the bill would impose an age requirement of 21 for purchasing products containing THC and require warning labels on products. Representative Ray Sorensen, Republican Greenfield, said the amended bill was a, quote, compromise, end quote, reached following extensive discussions on consumable hemp. The bill's floor manager, Representative Steve Holt, Republican Denison, said, quote, "It is no secret I would like the THC limit to be much lower," end quote. But the legislation would give law enforcement and the Department of Health and Human Services tools they needed to effectively regulate the industry. While there are many intoxicating THC products available for purchase in Iowa now, Holt said the original Iowa Hemp Act was not intended to legalize the product for sale. Added regulations are necessary to ensure that some of the problems posed by Iowa's current hemp product market are addressed, he said. Quote, "The reality is that these products could currently be sold to children based on the law because, again, we did not anticipate or understand what was coming, and clearly neither did the feds at the time they passed their Hemp Act," Holt said. "It is a bit of the wild, wild west out there right now in Iowa, thanks to the loopholes we did not know we created." Some lawmakers brought up concerns with the proposal's economic impact on Iowa businesses. Representative Bob Kressig, Democrat Cedar Falls, said the legislation could affect 1,100 Iowa retailers who currently stock consumable hemp products and who employ roughly 3,000 people. Requirements on warning labels and restrictions on how much THC can be contained in packaging could stop manufacturers from selling hemp products in Iowa, he said, leading consumers to go outside the state for purchases. Quote, "I'm hearing it from the retailers saying this," Kressig said. "When they close, they'll lose the employees. The customer won't be able to purchase that product from a knowledgeable individual. And they'll have to order it online or maybe go, oh, I guess they could go to Minnesota. They could go to Illinois. They could go to Missouri. Those states offer products to the people." Representative John Forbes, Democrat Urbandale, said he was afraid of the, quote, "unintended consequences," end quote, of the bill for Iowans who use hemp products for medical purposes. Forbes, a pharmacist, said he has worked with patients who use CBD or hemp products to recover from opioid addiction or who are looking for ways to manage pain outside of prescription drugs. Quote, "I think we're not hitting the nail on the head here when it comes to being able to help Iowans that are seeking out this as an alternative to maybe taking other prescription medications and increasing quality of life, helping them," Forbes said. Ellipses. "This bill, I think, will make it much more difficult to access these products." Holt said the legislation does not affect Iowa's medical cannabidiol program. He cited written comments from medical professionals, including those with the Blank Children's Hospital, who expressed concerns about people using hemp products interchangeably with medical CBD, especially as it relates to medical treatment for children. Quote, "I would respectfully ask that we put the safety and well-being of our citizens and our amazing state first in this discussion," Holt said. The bill passed on a 78-16 vote and moves to the Senate for consideration. The bill must be approved this week by a Senate committee to meet the second, quote, "funnel," end quote, deadline of the 2024 legislative session and remain eligible for consideration. Ag and Environment, Government and Politics. Committee declines to discuss controversial public lands bill. By Jared Strong, March 13, 2024. A committee of the Iowa House did not consider a bill it was set to discuss Wednesday that would limit land purchases by the State Department of Natural Resources, potentially dooming its passage this legislative session. Senate File 2324 would prevent the department from obtaining new public land at auction or from not-for-profit organizations that bought the land at auction. It has faced considerable opposition from conservation and hunting groups, counties, and residents for its potential to limit the expansion of public outdoor spaces. It is backed by the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation and the Iowa Cattlemen's Association to help keep cheaper farmland available to livestock producers. The bill was rejected by a House subcommittee in February, but the Senate modified and approved it 2 weeks ago. That version was recommended Tuesday by a different House subcommittee that was led by the bill's author, Representative Austin Harris, Republican Moulton. The bill needs support from a full House committee this week to remain viable under Iowa's legislative rules. It had been scheduled for a state government committee vote Wednesday morning, but committee chairperson, Representative Jane Bloomingdale, Republican Northwood, declined to call it for consideration. Quote, "Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation is grateful to the Iowans who made it clear that they support the growth of public parks, trails, and wildlife areas in our state," said Anna Gray, public policy director for the foundation. "We are pleased that this bill didn't advance any further in the House and thank the legislators who listened." The DNR is set to recognize the foundation during a Thursday afternoon event at the Capitol, for selling 368 acres of land to the state for less than market value. The department said it was equivalent to a $466,000 donation. Harris said Tuesday that the bill was merely meant to codify existing DNR policy to avoid auctions for land purchases. However, that policy is not absolute, whereas the bill has no exceptions. Harris did not immediately respond to a request to comment for this article. Education, government, and politics. Bill to fund school safety, staff firearm training passes House. By Robin Opsahl, March 13, 2024. House lawmakers approved legislation Wednesday that would provide funding for schools to implement safety measures, including allowances for schools to pay for arming staff. House File 2652 passed in a 59-35 vote, would create a $3 million grant program for schools to purchase, quote, infrastructure and equipment related to employee permits to carry weapons, end quote, as well as providing schools up to $25,000 for firearm training and stipends for employees who go through trainings. These provisions work in conjunction with House File 2586, passed by the House in February, which would create a training and permit system for school staff to carry firearms on campus as a measure to improve school safety. Representative Carter Nordman, Republican Panora, said the bill comes after 10 weeks of discussion on school safety in the wake of the Perry High School shooting January 4th, where a gunman killed and injured students, as well as the school principal, Dan Marburger. Quote, as horrific as the events at Perry were, it has spurred a productive conversation within this body on the actions we can take to secure our schools and ensure we have a safe learning environment across the state, Nordman said. Nordman said House Republicans believe improving school safety in Iowa requires a, quote, multi-pronged approach, end quote, and that the two bills introduced this session take multiple steps to improve safety measures. In addition to the measures on funding for training staff to carry firearms, the bill also creates a pilot program for schools to implement gun detection software through existing school cameras. It would also require every school building to have an emergency radio system paid for using federal American Rescue Plan funding, as well as allowing some schools to use mobile panic alert systems. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confer said that while she and Democrats support measures to improve school safety, she did not support use of government funding to bring guns into schools. She also criticized the movement toward funding for firearms in schools, while the legislature has not provided overall funding for Iowa's K-12 education. House lawmakers passed a 3% increase to per-pupil funding for Iowa's public schools in February, but the Senate has yet to take up the bill. Quote, I also fear that we are creating a program in which teachers who are incentivized to bring guns to school might be put at an advantage than other teachers who choose not to bring guns to school might also feel, Confer said. I realize that this doesn't directly appropriate the money, but it does create the program that allows for that to happen. I have concerns fundamentally about spending taxpayer dollars to put more guns in our schools. Nordman argued that, quote, restrictive gun laws, end quote, supported by Democrats would not prevent shootings that have happened at Iowa educational spaces in recent years, including Perry, Des Moines East High School, and Starts Right Here, but that the bills presented by Republicans provide, quote, real preventative solutions, end quote, to gun violence at schools. Quote, the unfortunate reality remains that bad things can still happen, Nordman said. Rather than live in denial of that fact, House Republicans are working to lower response times to school emergencies. Nordman cited a Des Moines Register Mediacom Iowa poll published Sunday that found a majority, 60%, of Iowans said they support arming teachers and staff in schools, with 38% opposing and 1% not sure. That support was higher among parents who have children younger than 18 who were polled, with 65% in favor of school staff having firearms in schools and 34% in opposition. Quote, no parent should have to worry about their student safety, Nordman said. No spouse should have to worry about their significant other coming home from a day of teaching. Schools should be a place for students and teachers to grow and learn. This bill in front of us offers solutions. The bill we passed last week offers solutions. That is what House Republicans do, offer solutions. The bill goes to the Senate for further consideration. D.C. Bureau, Election 2024, Government and Politics. After 2 months of primaries and caucuses, Biden, Trump clinch their nominations. by Jacob Fischler, March 13, 2024. The rematch is set. President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump clinched their party's nominations for president by winning state primaries Tuesday, setting up the same choice voters saw in the 2020 election. Both candidates are unpopular with the general electorate, but neither faced serious hurdles to their nominations in the states that have held presidential nominating contests. Early polls of the November election show Trump with a slim lead at the national level and in key swing states. Control of both chambers of Congress will also be at stake in November. Democrats face a disadvantage in defending their U.S. Senate majority, while House Republicans' effort to keep their slim majority will hinge on a handful of key races. Biden, who defeated Trump's re-election attempt in 2020, won Democratic primaries in Georgia, Mississippi, and Washington State on Tuesday, giving him 2,107 delegates. The Democratic National Committee rules required a candidate to secure 1,968 delegates to clinch the nomination. Democrats will officially nominate Biden at their national convention in Chicago from August 19th to 22nd. Trump swept Republican primaries and caucuses in Georgia, Hawaii, Mississippi, and Washington on Tuesday, giving him 1,241 delegates so far. He needed 1,215 to clinch the nomination. Republicans will make him their presidential nominee for the third straight cycle at their convention in Milwaukee, July 15th through 18th. The candidates clinched nominations after only about half of states held nominating contests. The process, which Republicans kicked off January 15th with the Iowa caucuses and Democrats started with their first official primary in South Carolina in February, is designed to take months, as only a few states generally hold contests in any given week. To win in November, the candidates are already focused on a handful of swing states: Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, that will award 93 of the 270 electoral votes needed to win the White House. Biden, quote, "Freedom and democracy are at risk," end quote. In a statement on becoming the presumptive Democratic nominee, Biden harked back to his successful 2020 campaign against Trump. He reminded voters he considered the 2020 race, quote, "a battle for the soul of the nation," end quote. He said the country was, quote, "in the middle of a comeback," end quote, and framed the upcoming rematch with Trump as another crucial crossroads for the country's Democratic future, much as in his State of the Union speech. Quote, "Amid this progress, we are facing a sobering reality. Freedom and democracy are at risk here, at home, in a way they have not been since the Civil War," he said. Donald Trump is running a campaign of resentment, revenge, and retribution that threatens the very idea of America. Biden, whose disapproval rating is 18 percentage points higher than his approval rating, according to an average compiled by 538, will likely seek to make much of the race about Trump, whose net approval rating is also in the negative double digits. Trump issued his own statement on his social media platform, Truth Social, that celebrated a, quote, "united and strong," end quote, Republican Party, and blasted Biden for his handling of inflation and immigration and the Justice Department's prosecutions of the former president. Quote, "We are now, under crooked Joe Biden, a third world nation, which uses the injustice system to go after his political opponent, me," Trump wrote. "But fear not, we will not fail. We will take back our once great country, put America first, and make America great again, greater than ever before." Trump's choice for his next running mate will likely come in the weeks leading up to the July convention. Trump and his Vice President Mike Pence had a public rift over Trump's handling of the 2020 election loss and conduct leading up to the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Trump pressured Pence to reject the certification of the electoral votes, which Pence was not authorized to do, and took hours to intervene as a mob of his supporters, some chanting, quote, "Hang Mike Pence," end quote, caused mayhem at the Capitol. Legal troubles no bar to GOP nomination. Trump faces felony charges in four cases, including two related to the Capitol attack, any of which on their own are unprecedented for a major party nominee. But even together, the spate of legal troubles did not deter GOP voters who clearly backed him in early states. He led in polls in the months leading up to the first contest, then won a slim majority in a multi-candidate field in Iowa, forcing most of the other candidates to drop out. In the second contest, New Hampshire's primary, he won a head-to-head race that was considered the most favorable territory for his last rival, former United Nations Ambassador and South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley. After winning races in Nevada and Michigan, Trump also bested Haley by more than 20 percentage points in her home state on February 24th. Haley won the March 3rd primary in the District of Columbia, becoming the first woman to win a GOP presidential primary, and the Vermont primary 2 days later on Super Tuesday, when 865 delegates were at stake in all those states. She dropped out of the race after Super Tuesday, but has not endorsed Trump. Because Trump has a majority of delegates, the upcoming Republican presidential primaries in Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Kansas, and Ohio next week will be formalities, though some states are also holding congressional primaries. Biden coasts despite concern over Gaza. Biden easily won the Democratic kickoff state of South Carolina, which the party chose this cycle to replace Iowa as the first in the nation contest, in part because of Biden's strength with the state's Black Democratic electorate. More than 95% of Democrats in South Carolina backed Biden in the February 3rd contest, and nearly 90% voted for him later that week in Nevada's primary. Neither U.S. Representative Dean Phillips of Minnesota nor author Marianne Williamson bested Biden in any state. But Muslim voters and progressives in the party sent a dissenting message, starting with the party's third official race in Michigan in late February. More than 100,000 Michigan Democrats, 13.2% of primary voters, selected uncommitted rather than vote for Biden or any of the other declared candidates. The protest vote that denied the incumbent two of the state's 117 delegates was seen as a rebuke of Biden's handling of Israel's war with Hamas in the Gaza Strip. A week later, on Super Tuesday, 18% of Minnesota Democrats selected uncommitted, reserving 11 of the 75 delegates at stake in the state. The discontent with Biden did not meaningfully help Phillips' long-shot bid, and the moderate House member suspended his campaign after receiving less than 8% of the vote in his home state. Phillips' futility against Biden was clear from the first unsanctioned Democratic primary in New Hampshire. After the Granite State refused to give up its first primary status, even after the Democratic National Committee selected South Carolina for that position, Biden didn't campaign or even appear on the ballot there, but still managed 65% as a write-in candidate to Phillips' 20%. Control of Congress. To maintain their 51-49 edge in the U.S. Senate, including the three independent senators grouped with them for the purposes of organization, Democrats have virtually no margin for error. Retiring West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin III's seat is almost certain to flip to the state's Republican Governor Jim Justice. Assuming the party change in West Virginia, Democrats would have to sweep the remaining competitive races, several of which are in Republican-leaning states. Virtually no Republican incumbents are considered at risk of losing their seats. Inside Elections, an elections analyst site, considers Democratic Senators John Tester of Montana and Sherrod Brown of Ohio tops-ups in their re-election races. Independent Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona is not pursuing re-election, and that state's race between U.S. Representative Ruben Gallego, a Democrat, and Republican Carrie Lake is also considered a toss-up. Democratic Senator Bob Casey in Pennsylvania and Jackie Rosen in Nevada are considered slight favorites in their re-election races, and Democrats are slightly favored to retain the Michigan seat now held by retiring Democrat Debbie Stabenow. Neither party has a solid advantage in the House, with various forecasters listing about 20 toss-up races that will determine control. Democrats would need a net gain of 4 seats to win back control of the chamber. You are listening to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for March 15, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's continue with this week's stories. Ag and Environment. Massive amount of crop fertilizer spills into southwest Iowa River. By Jared Strong, March 13, 2024. An estimated 265,000 gallons of liquid nitrogen fertilizer leaked from a farmer's cooperative in Red Oak early this week, and most of it went into the East Nishnabotna River, according to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. An investigation into the extent of the environmental damage is pending, but the crop fertilizer killed fish and might have affected the river all the way to the Missouri border, which is about 40 miles downstream from the southwest Iowa town, said Wendy Whitrock, a DNR senior environmental specialist who investigated the incident. Whitrock said it is likely the largest fertilizer spill she has investigated. Quote, it is a lot of fertilizer. The spill was reported Monday morning by NEW Cooperative after one of its employees noticed a leak and stopped it. The cause of the spill is under investigation, but the fertilizer leaked from a valve in an area where it is transferred from a very large tank into smaller tanks for distribution. The large tank, which holds about 500,000 gallons, is in a containment area that can prevent water spills, but the transfer area does not have the same protection, Whitrock said. It's unclear how long the valve was leaking. Quote, upon discovery of the spill, management immediately initiated containment protocols as per our established safety procedures, New Cooperative said in a prepared statement on Wednesday. We promptly notified the appropriate local authorities and regulatory agencies and have been working diligently in close cooperation with them ever since. A spokesperson for the Fort Dodge-based cooperative declined to comment further. That amount of fertilizer is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. The cooperative lies just east of the river on the north side of Red Oak. The fertilizer flowed into a drainage ditch and then into the river. Its effect on the river was exacerbated by low river flow, Whitrock said. High flows can help dilute the contamination. East Nishnabotna is flowing about 7% of normal at Red Oak, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. The area upstream of it has severe drought, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. The DNR's on-site investigation into the fish kill that has resulted from the spill was expected to conclude Wednesday, said John Lorenzen, a fisheries biologist for the department. He declined to reveal its early findings, but noted the large amount of fertilizer that went into the river. Quote, obviously, that's not good, he said. The DNR alerted towns downstream from Red Oak about the potential effect the spill might have on drinking water, although none of the towns draw water directly from the river. Several of them have relatively shallow wells near the river, according to DNR records. Missouri state officials are also investigating the impacts the spill might have on the Nishnabotna River, which goes for about 10 miles in that state before joining the Missouri River. Kansas City draws drinking water directly from the river, but the Missouri River is large, and the city is more than 100 miles downstream. Quote, we think it'll be fairly diluted by the time it gets down here, said Karen Rouse, a regional director from the Missouri Department of Natural Resources. Education. Iowa community colleges approve tuition increases for upcoming year. By Brooklyn Dracy, March 12, 2024. As community colleges work to set their budgets for the upcoming school year, inflation and competitive pay are contributing to decisions to increase tuition. Des Moines Area Community College and Hawkeye Community College have approved tuition and fee rates for the 2024-25 school year at recent board meetings ahead of new and returning students reaching out to pay to attend classes in the fall. The DMAC Board of Directors approved an $8 increase in tuition for fiscal year 2025 Monday, bringing the total to $193 per credit hour. DMAC President Bob Denson said this increase is due primarily to inflation increasing costs, but would also help in raising pay for faculty and staff. Higher education is a very competitive industry, he said, and offering good pay is important for retention. The DMAC staff and faculty work very hard and deserve a pay increase as well, he said. Quote, people have choices, and even more choices now because many of them can work online. They don't even have to move to Colorado to work for an institution there, Denson said. So we want them here. The Hawkeye Community College Board of Trustees increased its tuition and fees costs to $225 per credit hour at last meeting, a $7.50 increase from the current school year. Dan Gillen, Vice President of Administration and Finance at Hawkeye Community College, said addressing inflation and making up for slightly declining enrollment numbers are the main drivers behind the increase. Gillen said the college's property tax revenues won't be seeing a huge bump as well, a just under 3% increase in the valuation. Quote, we're just trying to balance everything and felt if we could keep a tuition increase in the neighborhood of the inflationary rate, that would help us keep the operations going like we want, Gillen said. Community colleges across the state, including DMAC and Hawkeye Community College, have been raising tuition since before the COVID-19 pandemic began. According to the fiscal year 2020 Iowa Community College Tuition and Fees Report, the average in-state tuition was $173.65 per credit hour, a 3.1% increase from the previous year. In the fiscal year 2024 report, released in October, the average tuition is $198.15 per credit hour. Colleges don't yet know what allocations they will receive from the state, Gillen said, which can cause some uncertainty. But the college uses proposed budget numbers and other information to plan out as best it can, just like with projected enrollment numbers. Gillen said they won't change the approved cost of tuition if certain allocations are different than expected, and they'll look to the other areas of the budget to make sure it's balanced. Quote, "It's just one of those variables," Gillen said. "You just need to understand that you might not get what you plan for when you do your certified budget." Denson said students start registering for classes in early April, and the college needs to have a tuition rate set by that time, even if there are some budget lines that may change. The college could reduce its tuition based on funding once more information is available, he said, but he doesn't expect to need to. Quote, "I'm pretty confident that our $8 number is good, and as I mentioned to the board, will still be $8 to $10 per credit hour cheaper than any of the other community colleges," Denson said. Ag and environment. Drinking water threat from nitrate persists during droughts. By Jared Strong, March 14, 2024. Iowa's drought of more than 3 years has significantly reduced the amount of farm fertilizers in the state's streams. But that doesn't guarantee a complete nitrate reprieve for the Des Moines metro area's drinking water. Quote, "It's really more complex than people can believe," said Ted Corrigan, the chief executive of Des Moines Water Works, which has one of the largest nitrate removal systems in the world. "We're actually monitoring it on an hour-by-hour basis, all these different factors to see what's changing, if a little bit of rainfall is going to change things, or if demand is going to pick up for some reason. We may change water sources multiple times in a day." The Des Moines and Raccoon Rivers are the primary sources of drinking water for more than 600,000 metro residents. When they contain too much nitrate, which is particularly harmful to infants, DMWW can blend untainted water from two lakes and several special wells. Those aquifer storage and recovery wells are used to pump water into the ground during periods of low demand to be pumped back out when demand is high. The utility can also activate its nitrate removal system at a cost of up to $16,000 per day. Because that system isn't often used at full capacity, the actual cost in a recent 10-year period averaged about $4,400 per day. Parts of Iowa have suffered from drought for more than 3 years, the longest stretch since the 1950s. That has potentially created a buildup of nitrate in farmland that could lead to a spike in stream contamination when typical rainfall returns. About half of the state's cropland is drained by underground tiling, which provides a quicker path for nitrate-laden stormwater to travel into streams. Quote, "I wouldn't say we're overly concerned about it, but we're aware," Corrigan said. "It's been dry for a few years, and then if we have normal rains or slightly above normal rains this spring, we're probably going to be dealing with a lot of nitrate," end quote. But there are a variety of factors at play. If the rains are torrential, it could dilute the nitrate concentrations in the rivers. It's the steady, moderate rainfall that can cause the most problems. Further, customer demand can complicate the situation. Periods of high river nitrate and high demand during warmer months are the most likely times in which DMWW operates its nitrate removal system, Corrigan said. In the recent drought, the utility has not needed to activate the system in 2020, 2021, or 2023, according to DMWW records. But steady rainfall in 2022 required the utility to operate the system for 23 days that June at a total cost of about $150,000. That total eclipsed the cost to run the system in each of the 3 years leading into the drought. Corrigan said it is difficult to predict what will happen this year. Quote, "We're keeping our eyes on the weather." Criminal justice and policing. Fired officer faced no charges after alleged vandalism and, quote, threat, end quote, to kill wife. By Clark Kaufman, March 14, 2024. A Muscatine police officer faced no criminal charges related to allegations that he threatened to kill his wife, had the home of his wife's boyfriend vandalized, and lied to investigators, according to newly disclosed records. While court records indicate Juan Daniel Lopez was never criminally charged in the 2011 case, he was fired by the Muscatine Police Department, a fact that he was accused of concealing from the city of Iowa City, which hired him in October 2021. Lopez's conduct in Muscatine came to light only recently after he was arrested in Johnson County on a charge of possession of cocaine with intent to deliver. That charge was dropped last month as part of a plea bargain that resulted in 2 years of probation for a violation of Iowa's drug tax law. At the time of his December 2023 arrest, Lopez was working as a construction inspector for Iowa City. Within days of the arrest, Lopez was fired from that job, in part because he had omitted from his job application any reference to his past employment with the city of Muscatine. Iowa City officials didn't learn of his employment there until they investigated his background in the wake of the drug arrest, according to state records. City and state records indicate Lopez worked as a Muscatine police officer from August 2008 until his discharge in December 2011. Newly disclosed records show that Lopez was the focus of a criminal investigation in late 2011 after a Muscatine man reported someone had thrown a brick through a picture window on the front of his house. According to police records, the victim in the case identified Lopez as the suspect. The alleged motive was an affair the victim had with Lopez's estranged wife. An investigation was launched, at which point one of Lopez's fellow officers, Anthony Keese, who is now the city's police chief, reported that Lopez had threatened to choke his wife to death and had commented how funny that would be. According to police records, Keyes' perception was that Lopez's comments represented an, quote, immediate threat, end quote, and so they were reported to a corporal. Lopez, quote, I know, this makes me look effing horrible, end quote. According to the police records, Lopez wasn't truthful when interviewed about the vandalism and admitted that he had instructed his wife not to turn over to investigators certain phone records. The police records indicate that when interviewed, Lopez told investigators he knew the vandalism incident had his, quote, name painted all over it, end quote, adding, quote, I know this makes me look effing horrible. The records suggest Lopez didn't personally throw the brick through the window, but was aware of who had done so. In speaking to investigators, Lopez allegedly expressed regret that a small child was in the house at the time of the incident. In police records tied to a disciplinary hearing on the matter, the city alleged Lopez was, quote, no stranger when it comes to misdeeds in his official capacity as a police officer, end quote. In 2010, the records state, Lopez was suspended for 2 days for improper handling of a firearm when he discharged his weapon in a manner that endangered two other police officers. The records also state that in 2011, Lopez was suspended for 4 days for his involvement in a barroom brawl and for instructing others not to report the incident to police. The same records indicate Lopez was given a verbal warning in 2011 for running the license plate of his wife's alleged boyfriend for no legitimate purpose. In October 2021, Lopez was hired by the city of Iowa City as a full-time construction inspector. He was arrested at work on December 1, 2023, and was charged with felony possession of cocaine with intent to deliver. Police alleged that during the course of an ongoing narcotics investigation, a U.S. Postal Service inspector intercepted a package sent to Lopez's apartment. According to police, the names of the purported sender and the recipient of the package were aliases known to be used by Lopez, and the package contained 490 grams, a little over 1 pound, of cocaine. Police then obtained search warrants for Lopez's apartments and vehicles and allegedly found 6 firearms, several boxes of ammunition, 2 digital scales covered in drug residue, and numerous packaging materials consistent with drug distribution. Several weeks later, Johnson County prosecutors agreed to drop the felony drug charges against Lopez in exchange for a guilty plea on a charge of failing to have a tax stamp for the drugs in question. He was fined $1,025, received a 5-year suspended prison sentence, and was placed on probation for 2 years. Johnson County Attorney Rachel Zimmerman Smith said Thursday that Lopez's status as a former police officer played no role in the decision to offer a plea deal in the case. She said that had Lopez been convicted of the drug charge, he would have been eligible for a deferred judgment due to his lack of prior criminal convictions. A deferred judgment typically results in probation followed by the case being expunged from publicly available court records. Speaking to the Iowa Capital Dispatch Wednesday and Thursday, Lopez declined to comment on either his 2023 arrest or his past employment with the Muscatine Police Department. Ag and Environment, Carbon Pipeline, Capital Clicks. North Dakota pipeline regulators set Monday meeting on summit permit. By Jeff Beach, March 14, 2024. North Dakota pipeline regulators will meet Monday to discuss a schedule for hearings in the Summit Carbon Solutions pipeline project. The Public Service Commission agenda also includes a request to reconsider an early decision on pipeline zoning ordinances. The meeting is at 11 a.m. in the Capitol. Summit Carbon Solutions has applied for a permit for a pipeline to transport carbon emissions from ethanol plants in 5 states to North Dakota. The carbon would be stored underground in Mercer and Oliver counties. The PSC last year denied Summit's application, but the Iowa-based company asked for a rehearing and has made changes to its route, including a wider berth around Bismarck, to address the concerns of the three-person commission. Summit says the pipeline will benefit the environment by reducing greenhouse gas emissions, will help ethanol plants remain competitive, and benefit farmers who supply the ethanol plants with corn. The project relies on taking advantage of federal tax credits for carbon storage. The project has recently expanded to include more than 50 ethanol plants, but only one of the plants is in North Dakota, Thorolton Ethanol at Castleton. But the project has been met with some resistance from landowners and county governments. Emmons and Burleigh counties on the main trunk of the pipeline passed ordinances with tighter restrictions on where the pipeline could run. Summit argued that North Dakota zoning laws preempt those ordinances. The PSC sided with Summit on that question. But Emmons County is challenging the PSC ruling in court, and Burleigh County petitioned the PSC to reconsider its order. That reconsideration is part of Monday's agenda. The agenda also includes a discussion for a schedule and location for the rehearing on the permit. The original round of hearings in 2023 were held in multiple counties along the route, often lasting for several hours. The controversial project has fallen behind its original schedule. Summit in 2021 said it had planned to begin construction in 2023 and be operational by 2024, but has yet to obtain the needed pipeline route permits. Inset Box. This story was originally published by North Dakota Monitor, which is part of State's Newsroom, a nonprofit news network supported by grants and a coalition of donors as a 501c3 public charity. North Dakota Monitor maintains editorial independence. Contact editor Amy Dalrymple for questions. info@northdakotamonitor.com. Ag and environment, government and politics, capital clicks. Meat labeling bill will survive second funnel. By Jared Strong, March 12, 2024. A bill that would prohibit Iowa food processors from using misleading labels on fake meat products was advanced by House Committee on Tuesday, ensuring it will remain viable after a legislative deadline this week. Senate File 2391 establishes fines for businesses that create the products and label them with words that are commonly associated with butchered meat, if they don't also include terms such as fake, imitation, or vegetarian. The bill targets substitute meat products that are made from insects, plants, or lab-grown meat. Violations can incur fines of up to $10,000. The bill also prohibits schools, community colleges, and universities from purchasing mislabeled meat products and lab-grown meat. It gained unanimous support in the Senate, but has met resistance from some Democrats in the House because of the school's prohibition. It was approved 18-5 by the House Agriculture Committee on Tuesday, indicating it had the support of at least four Democrats. Committee Chair Representative Mike Sexton, Republican Rockwell City, said the bill will likely be amended with Democrats' input before a full House vote on its passage. Under lawmakers' second funnel deadline, most bills need approval by at least one legislative chamber and a committee on the opposite chamber by the end of this week to remain eligible for debate this session. And that does it for today's reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for March 15, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gaisher. You can access the recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate.
Since the dawn of humankind, people have used caves to explore, hold religious ceremonies, create art, or avoid the dangers of weather and predators. Partly because of that, they continue to fascinate scientists today. To create a cave, Mother Nature needs three things: water, rock that can be dissolved by it, and lots of time. Rainwater, as it falls through the atmosphere, picks up carbon from CO2 to become a weak carbonic acid. By the time it hits Earth, it's about as acidic as coffee. As it percolates through the soil, it picks up more carbon from decaying plants, becoming a slightly stronger acid. If the rock below the soil is limestone, gypsum, or dolomite, the water can dissolve along tiny cracks. Over many thousands of years, the cracks become channels, then tunnels, and could eventually become caverns. Water might also mix with hydrogen sulfide gas seeping up from natural oil and gas deposits to form sulfuric acid, which can also dissolve the rock. Protected from daily and seasonal changes on the surface, caves can maintain a stable temperature and humidity. In these delicate environments, the remains of ancient animals and humans, which could have quickly decayed on the surface, have been preserved for millennia. Deeper, more isolated caves have preserved bacteria and microbes undisturbed for millions of years. These qualities make caves important sites for researchers, natural time capsules. There's probably an amazing cave near you, so take a trip and get to know your Earth. I'm Scott Tinker, dissolving mysteries on EarthDate.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.